WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.
Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is All of It. I'm Allison Stewart, and this week marks a historic and dark anniversary, the first assassination of a federal judge in the 20th century. On the morning of May 28, 1979, in San Antonio, Texas, Judge John Woods went to check a flat tire on his wife's car in their driveway when he was shot and killed. The investigation into Woods' murder was the biggest FBI manhunt in its history, taking 2 years and $12 million. The person convicted was Charles Harrelson, a man who claimed he was a dental equipment tech and a gambler who arranged high-stakes poker games. Federal authorities said Harrelson was a hitman who had already been convicted of one murder, and he had been hired to kill a federal judge in broad daylight. And if that name is starting to ring a bell, that may be because his son is Oscar-nominated actor Woody Harrelson, who at the time was just starting out. Woody would get his break on the TV show Cheers 6 years after the judge's death. So after hearing that story, you know what comes next. A podcast. Son of a Hitman is a 10-episode limited series that drops Tuesdays on Spotify, and it brings Jason Kavanaugh, the podcast host and EP, to the show today. Jason, welcome to All of It.
Hi, Allison. Thanks for having me.
So you talked to a lot of people about Charles Harrelson. How do people describe him?
Yeah, so it depends on who you're talking to, of course, but you know, I've heard everything from con man, card shark, killer for hire, to charming, really likable, funny. And, you know, I think he was probably all of those things.
So he went on trial for three different murders throughout his life, and he died in a supermax prison, the same one where the Unabomber is held. Why did you want to start the series with the last killing, the killing of Judge John Woods?
You know, I think at the time, President Carter called it the crime of the century. It was seen as an attack on the federal judiciary. I mean, this was, you know, really a domestic terrorism. And given all that, I had never heard of this. You know, I was born soon after this took place. And I think, you know, obviously all of us are familiar with Woody Harrelson's work, but I don't think a lot of people realize that his father was, you know, convicted of this really momentous sort of act. And, you know, while of the three murders that he was charged with, this was obviously the heaviest and the biggest. You know, the other two were smaller hits of, you know, people who were not as well known as a federal judge.
So I mentioned this huge FBI investigation into the Woods murder. How did Charles Harrelson become the prime suspect?
It actually took 2 years. You know, the FBI looked at him early, but because this was, you know, it was essentially, I won't say cold case, but they didn't have the evidence to make a conviction for a long time, and they had several different suspects. You know, he was looked at early, but then they turned their attention towards some other suspects. And only after 2 years and wiretap surveillance on this drug smuggler named Jimmy Chagra, who at the time was the largest weed smuggler in the United States, you know, through wiretap surveillance, they were able to, you know, tie this to Charles Harrelson and eventually found a murder weapon, which really was just the stock of a rifle. They couldn't run ballistics on a stock, obviously. But, you know, it took a while just to have enough evidence to bring charges against him.
Why would someone want this particular judge dead?
So this guy was John Wood. He was known as Maximum John because he was notorious for giving the maximum drug sentence to all the cases that came before him. So, you know, this was West Texas in the late 70s. The war on drugs had started in the early 70s. And this guy was, you know, a right-wing judge. He had put a lot of people away for a long time over drug charges. And granted, this was a federal judge, so they were seeing, you know, this wasn't minor offenses. This wasn't just possession. This was, you know, smuggling. But he was, you know, not well-liked, to say the least. You know, and just 6 months prior to his assassination, there was an assassination attempt made on his assistant U.S. attorney, James Kerr. So, you know, there was violence in the air in this area.
And I don't want to give too much away. There's so much detail in here. I don't think we could give it all away.
Sure.
But what led Charles Harrelson to appeal his conviction?
Sure. So in the late 90s, the Harrelson sons actually spearheaded this appeal. And that was because there was a new act was passed, the Anti-Terrorism Act, which basically changed habeas corpus rules for terrorist acts. So basically Charles Harrelson had 1 year. This gets into the legal weeds a little bit, but basically he had 1 year to file a petition for a new trial. And so, you know, the Harrelson sons rushed to make the case. You know, they didn't feel like he had received a fair trial back in 82 when he was tried for this case, and, you know, for good reason. And so they brought this before a federal judge to appeal their father's case.
My guest is Jason Kavanaugh. He is executive producer and host of the podcast Son of a Hitman. So it's clear that Charles Harrelson was not a particularly nice guy. On top of being a hitman, he was verbally and physically abusive of women. He was racist. He was manipulative. Mm-hmm. Let's play a clip. This is a clip of Rajan, who, along with his wife, Leroy, was one of the prosecutors in the Judge Woods case, describing how he, Harrelson, tried to cut a deal during the trial.
He, at one point, decides he's going to try to negotiate a deal to benefit him. He calls the FBI and says he wants Leroy, my wife, to come out to his place in jail out in Van Horn, Texas. And so, of course, we both went out there and we got there. I don't want to talk to you. I want to talk to your wife. And so he was trying to pick out someone he could charm. He could be quite charming, but at the same time, he was trying to dominate.
So, just I'm curious for you as a producer and putting this together, how did you decide to strike the balance between making Harrelson the focus, the main character, and not glorifying him versus concentrating on the crimes? Can you talk to us a little bit about your putting on your executive producer brain? Like, how do we do this?
Yeah, it was challenging because obviously there's this fascinating element of a hitman. You know, obviously it's a trope that gets played out a lot in Hollywood and really like celebrated and glorified. And then, you know, for me, I think it was a matter of once I began actually talking to people who were affected by this, you know, one of the earlier interviews that I did was with this guy, David Berg, whose brother, Alan, was murdered by Charles, or allegedly murdered by Charles. Charles was found not guilty for that killing. But, you know, speaking with David Berg, whose older brother was murdered, you know, you realize that there's a human impact. And that this isn't just some, you know, it's not a hitman from, you know, it's not Pulp Fiction. These are real people. And, you know, once you start to see that, you recognize that there's more to this. That being said, there's nuance. I mean, you know, in speaking to the Harrelson sons, they know their father from later in life when he was in prison, and he's their father, you know, and everybody, you know, wants to see their father in some kind of a positive light, and you see the good things, and you know, you don't know about some of the things that maybe he had done in his past. So it was just a matter of trying to really like get to the humanity behind this thing. And for me, it was a matter of having compassion for everybody who I was talking to and recognizing the humanity in them and seeing like, oh, really just allowing people to tell their stories, you know, with Charles Harrelson as sort of the entry point. You know, there's a lot of family stories that get told here. The Berg family, the Chagra family, the Harrelson family, the Yon family, you know.
Yeah, I mean, at some points you're asking people to revisit incidents and times in their lives that are very dark and very difficult. Some people don't want to. Who was the hardest person to convince to speak with you?
You know, it's a good question. I think, you know, there were people who just did not want to talk. Mm-hmm. You know, so, a guy who I spoke to just over the phone was Frank DeMaria, who had allegedly hired Harrelson for the first murder. And, you know, naturally he wasn't too keen on revisiting that stuff. You know, he said at the time in his life that he'd like to forget. You know, Sandra Sue Attaway, Charles's ex-girlfriend, you know, she was hesitant at first. And I think it was just a matter of getting people to realize I'm not trying to set them up, but really just to allow people to tell their story. And then there were people who just didn't, who chose not to participate. I mean, the DeGelia family, Sam DeGelia was the second murder Charles Harrelson was charged with. And the DeGelia family just, you know, it was a time in their lives that they don't want to go back to. You know, his kids don't want to revisit the murder of their father. And I can understand that and respected that.
Now, Woody Harrelson hasn't spoken very much about this, and he did tell Barbara Walters a long time ago that he thought his father may have been in the CIA. Was there ever a chance that Woody Harrelson would be involved with this project?
You know, we've spoken to Woody's team several times, and at this point I have a close relationship with his two brothers, Brett and Jordan. And, you know, with Woody, he, you know, he's private about this stuff. And, you know, Brett from the very beginning was like, Woody, you know, Woody doesn't like to talk about this stuff. And I've also spoken to a couple of attorneys who represented Charles Harrelson on Woody's behalf. And they have, you know, they've shared with me their opinions as to why Woody doesn't like to talk about this stuff. Obviously, I can't speak for him. Mm-hmm. But I think it's hard. You know, it's his father. And obviously, he's in the spotlight himself. And I think it's the sort of thing where you can't, you know, you can't hold the children responsible for the things that their parents did, is my perspective on that.
My guest, Jason Cavanaugh, executive producer and host of the podcast Son of a Hitman. Brett Harrelson, though, his brother and Charles Harrelson's son, is credited as a producer on the podcast. Why did he want to be involved and hear all these things about his father?
Yeah, I think, you know, Brett, when I first met with him, I realized that he still has so many questions about his father. He was sent to live with his dad when he was 16 years old, after he got caught smoking pot in high school. And he, you know, at the time was told his dad was a dental technician. And meanwhile, Brett saw suitcases filled with cash. He saw his father carrying a gun at all times. And, you know, at that time believed his dad was a card shark. You know, his dad kicked him out when he got caught skipping school. He got sent back to live with his mother, and a month or so later, the judge was assassinated. And from that point on, you know, 2 years later, Charles was in prison, and for the rest of their lives, for the rest of his life, he was in prison, and that was how they knew him. So, you know, they had questions about who this guy really was, what he was responsible for. You know, I think he was a mystery to them, too. And so Brett really just wants to get to the truth about his dad. There's a lot of rumors that have been thrown out there over the years, and you know, they want to know what's real and what's not.
At various points during the podcast, you have producers and even Brett Harrelson read from court transcripts. How important were those to you as you pieced together this chain of events, and why did you decide to go ahead and have people read them?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously I've spoken to a lot of people firsthand who were involved in these cases, but you know, some of them have taken place. You know, the first murders took place in 1968. It was a long time ago. People's memories are faded. And, you know, it's also a matter of making sure that it's not just hearsay, but that I'm backing this stuff up with evidence that was presented at the time. And so one of the ways to do that was to go back to court documents and court transcripts and see what was said, you know, under oath. And the decision to have people read those, I mean, Charles, you know, he passed away in 2008, I believe. So he's not around. Obviously, there's some archival material where Charles speaks about some of these crimes, which we use in the podcast. But beyond that, you know, the place to find his words were in these court documents. And, you know, Brett, of the three Harrelson brothers, everyone says Brett is the most like Charles. So it was, you know, it was obvious to us to have Brett read his father's words.
And speaking of his father's words, in the first episode, there's this claim that Charles Harrelson was a CIA agent and involved in President Kennedy's assassination. Was there some evidence for that? Is that a story he liked to tell? How far down the rabbit hole did you go on that before deciding to scurry back up?
So the JFK claim, I mean, that was one of the first things that I had heard about Charles Harrelson, you know, this rumor that Woody Harrelson's father killed JFK. As a skeptical person, I obviously you know, didn't take that as truth. That being said, Charles Harrelson told people over the years that he had some involvement in the JFK assassination. I spoke to several of those people. And, you know, there's mixed opinions on that. You know, one of the FBI agents who I speak to in episode six was on the House Select Committee on Assassinations that looked at the JFK assassination. And, you know, he believes that the JFK assassination is as the FBI tells it, you know, as the official narrative goes, the Harvey Oswald shot JFK. Other people who I've spoken to have different theories on what happened there, and some do believe that Charles Harrelson was involved in the JFK assassination.
Does the CIA thing come up again in a different context ever, aside from that?
You know, it comes up. I am skeptical of the claim that Charles Harrelson was a CIA operative, but there, you know, there's it's plausible, but I am skeptical and doubtful.
The name of the podcast is Son of a Hitman. Its host is Jason Cavanaugh. He also serves as its executive producer. Jason, thank you so much for joining us on All of It today.
Thank you, Allison.
WNYC Studios is brought to you by ZBiotics. Seize the day after a night of drinks with ZBiotics pre-alcohol probiotic drink. ZBiotics was invented by PhD scientists to break down the byproduct of alcohol, which is most responsible for making you feel crummy the next day. Drink ZBiotics before your first drink, drink responsibly, and you'll wake up refreshed and ready to take on the day. Try it for yourself at ZBiotics.com/WNYC and get 15% off your first order when you use WNYC at checkout. That's ZBiotics.com/WNYC and use the code WNYC at checkout for 15% off.